this portfolio committee meeting and welcome you, honorable members, to this meeting. Also, the minister and all his department, and of course, expecting to be led by the acting DG or DG. And also would love to also welcome Transnet executive and board members on this meeting. I don't want to waste our time, but I just want to tell or inform the member, the honorable members, that Mr. Tisang Muchumi is on leave, and we are working with currently Ms. Yandiswa Tele, who will be taking us through the apologies now. If he is on the platform, I think he will be just assisting Ms. Tele to just get into grip with the process. Can we go straight to Ms. Tele for apologies? Is there any apologies?
Yes, Chair. I've said I will just assist the quickly with the meeting when it starts. The apologies I received from the portfolio committee is from Mr. Kwankwa. And then our delegation for the meeting today, we've got the minister, is led by the minister, the acting DG, the chief director, Mr. Bessa. And then from Transnet, it's led by the board chairperson, Mr. Mulefe, the group chief executive, Ms. Portia Derby, the group chief financial officer, Ms. Nati Dlamini, Nkululeko Dlamini, the group chief operations for strategy and planning, Dr. Andrew Shaw, chief audit executive, Eskan, audit committee chair, Elfon Ziener, and the company secretary, S. Bopape. That's the and then there's also a apology from the deputy minister chair. That's the delegation from the department and Transnet.
Thank you, Mr. Muchumi. Welcome. I've already welcomed all of you, honorable minister, with your team, including Transnet chairperson, board of, the chairperson of the board, Dr. Popo Mulefe, and the group CEO. You all welcome in this meeting. We are expecting Transnet to make a presentation on their annual report and financial statement for 2021-2022 financial year. And I don't want us to waste that time, Honorable Minister. I will just give over to you to give an overview before you also give over to your team for presentation. Thank you, Minister.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. And good morning to the Transnet delegation and to all others who might have joined this call. Thank you very much, Chair, for your introductory remarks. I'll be very brief, like yourself, just to say that the year 21-22 was still a difficult year in the context of COVID still being around in some form or the other. Secondly, the July unrest, which had one or other kind of impact on Transnet, as the colleagues will point out to you. And thirdly, the structural constraints which confront Transnet in the form of availability of locomotives, which have been in the news more recently, and the vandalism of copper wires and cables and other forms of encroachment on railway lines, all of which has impacted on the performance of some areas of the business itself. It also experienced, as you know, a cyber attack on its IT infrastructure, which it did remarkably well to overcome fairly quickly. And congratulations must go to the Transnet team for achieving that. And of course, post the end of March and in April this year, we were then confronted with the floods, although it doesn't impact directly on the performance of the 2021-2022 year. Nonetheless, the numbers look reasonably good, and the performance is one that we can applaud as Transnet works its way out of all of its difficulties, created, as we now have been reminded more recently, by a state capture, but also by the limitations of the 1064 transaction in respect of locomotives and other operational issues as well. So it's, in my view, well on its way to improving its performance and has shown, as the new management team and the board, a remarkable agility in responding to the various crises that it has had to deal with over a period of time. It will still have some constraints in relation to operating capital and liquidity, as the colleagues will point out to you. And those are matters that are under consideration, both by the board and ourselves, as well as we traverse the rest of this year. So thank you very much for this opportunity. And let me hand over to the chair of the board, with your consent, chairperson, and he will then manage his team. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Can we go to the board, Chair?
Good morning, Chair and honorable members, morning ministers, executives of Transnet directors. Thank you very much for inviting us. I today propose to be businesslike and not spend time talking. I just want to indicate apologies that we have received from the directors. It's Louis van Ziena, Alwane Ramabulana, Dimaka Tsomatsoka, and Professor Sydney Mufama. We got those apologies. Mele Tlape, I was advised that she will be joining the meeting. I don't know if she has joined yet. Gratitude is online. Mayor Fikelepe is also not present. So I think the minister has given a good introductory remarks. I think we should, chairperson, with your permission, go straight to having given those apologies, go straight to the presentation, which will be led by Portia, and she would indicate who the team as they come one after the other. Thank you very much.
I think the team is ready to kick. Can you go ahead?
Good morning, honourable members, honourable chair, and minister, honourable minister, public enterprises, and the chair of Transnet, and then the executives on the call. Once again, thank you for the opportunity. Honourable chair, can I just ask, how much time are you giving us for the presentation so that we can measure ourselves on that and have time for discussion? This is useful to know at the beginning.
Let me give you 30, if it comes to a push, at least the 35 minutes will be enough. But I don't want us to find ourselves in the previous situation where questions have to be written to you to respond in writing, blah, blah, blah. I wish us to finish this meeting at the right time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So you will forgive me then if we move pretty fast on the presentation. Can you please go to the next slide? And go to the next slide after that. And the next one. Okay, stop here. Chair, the Minister has indicated 2021-22 was, as you know, quite a continuation of a pretty rough period. However, there may have been a reduction in the extent of COVID that was being experienced. And I think in South Africa, we were learning to live with it. But as you recall, there were still quite a few restrictions. The improvement in global growth, unfortunately, with also the continuing to increase in patches around the world of COVID, meant that supply chains continued to be disrupted. We would have felt it quite strongly when containers were stuck between the China as well as between the US. And that often led to port emissions in South Africa, which did have an impact on the South African economy. But we can say now that the emissions have pretty much dried up. In the case of sub-Saharan Africa, the biggest issue was the rising level of countries in distress, which were about 60.5% of the countries. And that has a significant impact on what they were able to do in terms of investment. And also, as you know, the growing inflation right across the board. In the case of South Africa, we had the economy rebounded to 4.9%. But that was also just a rebound because it had dropped so dramatically in the period. So that's really a COVID recovery more than anything else. However, unfortunately, as the minister has indicated, we had to deal with two incidents, both the unrest in July in the KZN area, which made operations close for about 3 days in that case, and shortly thereafter, the issue of the cyber attack that we had to deal with as Transnet, which also had the impact of slowing down operations, because whilst we were dealing with the cyber attack, we had to move towards manual systems. TFR was able to continue operating slower, and the ports even slower, because they it's very important that you always have an accurate location of the containers. And as the minister indicates, the turnaround and the return onto operations on the ICT side has been great. And also what we've tried to do, and just to reference on the floods, what we try to do is that we return not to the previous position, but rather to an improved situation. And we can say that in the ICT environment, we're not there yet, but significantly further along. And as ministers indicated as well, we've continued to suffer with the what we regard as really three challenges on the rail side: locomotive availability, and that's just the reliability as well as it relates to the availability of parts and spares. And if you recall, in the last year, we were still struggling a lot with the procurement processes because we hadn't yet received all of the approvals to enable us to have a much faster procurement process, which since the beginning of the year we have. Number two is the underinvestment in infrastructure, which has meant that it's taking us a lot longer to remove all of the speed restrictions and to undertake all of the maintenance that we need to undertake, and therefore reduce the probability of derailments. And then lastly, which remains a serious challenge that we deal with, is the issue of cable theft. And I must say, just using this opportunity, in this last week on the North Corridor, and that's the corridor that moves coal, in 2 days in succession, we have been hit quite seriously with cable theft. And in seriously sensitive areas, we must say that this one, unlike all of the others, which we tend to regard as safe, horrible as it is, and organized crime, but this one looks malicious. So we are going to be definitely undertaking quite a strong investigation to identify who the culprit is. But we've got some suspicions on our side. Next slide, please. As you know, six operating divisions, and including The academy, which supports all of the operating divisions, and the academy is made up of several schools, which will cover all of our, which cover all of our operating areas. And I think the only one that we actually don't cover at present as a separate stream, which we do think we should start designing courses for, is property. You know, when you look at the asset base, last week Friday when we were on the panel, talking about the Joint Up initiative. And I think it's really important, that Joint Up initiative that we've started with Eskom, Prasa and Telkom, to look at the issue of cable-based, battery-based, that we have. One of the statements made in the presentation by the acting CEO of Prasa, Hisham, was to say Prasa has 2,000 kilometers of rail, and in its 2,000, it suffered at least 1,000 kilometers of cable theft in the last financial year. That's 50% of their system. In the case of Transnet, we have suffered 1,500 incidents, 1,506 kilometers of cable being stolen of a 30,400 kilometer system. But what we can assure you, that a bulk of our 1,500 ties up almost completely with the area that was hit on the Prasa system as well. So really, the joining up and working together with Prasa is absolutely crucial for them to be able to break the back of cable theft on their system, but also on our system. But this is just an indication. Our total overall asset base, 356 billion, and investment property portfolio is 29.1. Next slide, please. I stop on the story of this last financial performance, to my mind, and when we were speaking, and even when we made the presentation, has really got to be a story about the one of the legs of our focus area, which is about asset optimization. And in this case, fundamentally about the property portfolio finally coming to its own. This map is just a reflection of the priority property development properties that we are working on right throughout the country. What was important about the revaluation, and Nonkululeko will cover the issue of revaluation of the properties, is that in revaluing the properties, we are able to actually ensure that if we enter into partnerships, and if we are in a situation where we end up selling a property, we get the actual value of the property as opposed to the previously depressed values of the property. I'll give you an example. The Carlton Centre was previously valued at about 600 million rand. Post the revaluation, it's 1.6 billion. Now, that is really important for us because, as you would have seen maybe in the market, we've advertised looking for, issued an RFI. We were looking for proposals for people to jointly co-develop the Carlton Centre for us as well as Adderley Square. If we had not revalued the asset, we would have ended up working with a much smaller value for Carlton Centre, and we would actually get less than what we require to be able to ensure development that ties up with the City of Joburg's plan as well as the province out there. Next slide, please. So the issues that would have impacted the last year's performance, 2021, but also some of them were closed and were actually already reported there. The McKenzie settlement, members, honourable members would know about that, and the 870 that was then brought back into the books of Transnet. We've also spoken about the Richards Bay land claims issue between Transnet and the Mandanzini community. That's still not quite closed. It needs formalization by the National Land Claims Commissioner, and since some issues need to be ironed out on that one. And then lastly, which is the case that we were dealing with last year, which was really having a seriously negative impact on our financials because we needed to make sure that we had appropriate provisions for the Cecil Total matter. We finally, fortunately, as Transnet won that case, and the Constitutional Court found in the favour that in our favour that that the variation agreement was lawfully terminated. However, unfortunately, our issues and the matters that the challenges between ourselves and SAFO continue. SAFO and Total, they refuse to pay the full amount. We have issued summons to them for them to pay the full amount because we can scarcely afford to continue providing services to SAFO and Total without being paid at all. We are, however, presented the case to NERSA, and we're hoping to get a final decision going forward. So these are some of these lingering matters that we continue trying to push hard to get to a resolution on. But Michelle Phillips is on the call, so if members have additional questions, I'm certain that when the questions come, we could answer those. Next slide, please. Next slide. Honourable Chair, given the issue of time, maybe, because I'm worried about the 35 minutes, maybe what I'd like to propose is that I stop here, let Nonkululeko make the presentation on the financials, and if we've got time at the end, we then come back to talk about the performance of the individual divisions. The financial overview covers all of the divisions as well.
It's fine. Continue, like, as you, yeah. As you propose, ma'am.
Yeah, okay, no, Chair. I think they are enabling that. I'll just come back in the end and I'll cover the ESG issues. Nonkululeko, please, can you take over?
Thank you, Portia. Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the members of the committee, as well as the Minister, the Board of Transnet, and colleagues. Chairperson, I will take you through the financial performance of the year. I think in the context set out by the Minister, as well as the CEO of Transnet, the revenue for 2022 was 1.8% better than the 2021 financial year. We reported 68.5 billion rand. And we will show later some of the improvement areas that we saw in the various commodities and products that we moved. The net operating expenses reduced by 5.9%. We reported 45 billion expenditure. And really the drivers there was that with the COVID year, we started a program to reduce the cost as much as possible from the business. And that indicated that we could do a bit more with the allocation we have, but as well, Chair, some of the provisions that we had in the POS, specifically in relation to the issues of theft in the pipeline, where we had done a lot of fixing in relation to the environmental damage that had been caused, we were able to reverse some of the provisions where we were comfortable that the work was done and the provision in certain areas was no longer required. The GCE of Transnet also mentioned the McKinsey recovery that we received. It was also a positive because it was money that we brought into the book without reversing any work that had been done. Chair, it is the year that we also had to do voluntary separate packages, and we managed to accommodate the related expenditure requirement within the allocated and still got to the 5.9% better performance on expenses. This then led to earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization being better by 20.5%, which was 23.4 billion rand, and the margin improving to 34.3%. We reported a net profit after tax of 5 billion. In 2021, Chair, we had reported a loss of 8.7 billion, but in a later slide, I'll go through a bit of a detail on the makeup of the profits that we made, taking into account the areas that were challenged and the areas that we were able to see some improvement. The capital expenditure area is a focus area for us, Chair, because we do want to ensure that the maintenance of the assets is carried in line with the requirements. And whenever we don't spend as much, we do make it a red. So we did spend a bit less, even though it's a cash positive impacts, but we do want to continue to spend a bit more on our assets to ensure that we can get better operations. We spent 13.2 billion rand on capital expenditure. In terms of the cash generated from the business then, it was 29.1 billion. We have a gearing. This is the money that we have raised from the lenders versus the money that is in the balance sheet of Transnet from operations. It's 45.5%. We have a target, Chair, not to gear the balance sheet over 50% in terms of the requirements. And we are working towards staying within these limits and to basically make sure that we leverage the balance sheet without getting uncomfortable with the leveraging. The cash interest cover at 2.6 was also a ratio we monitor in line with the lender requirements, and we made 2.6 for the year, which assisted us in ensuring that we don't breach the covenants that we have with our lenders. Chair, we continue to train our people, and we do want to continue spending much more in this area and ensure that we've got a strong bench strength in relation to engineers, artisans, and it's an area we are monitoring closely. Regarding the lost time injury frequency rate, we performed at 0.69. The global benchmark in this area, Chair, is 1, so we are still within, but it is our priority as well that everybody goes home from Transnet uninjured, and there is a lot of focus in this area still. We spent 29.2 billion rands in relation to the BBBE requirements, and again, this is an area of focus for us. If I go to the next slide, and just to give an overview of some of the strides that we have made in trying to make sure we get back on track with the reporting of the financial performance of Transnet. We have been struggling with qualified audit opinions for the past 4 years. And the main driver was always that we had not complied with PFMA requirements since 2011. And over the years, in trying to fix the history of this, it was quite a mammoth task. We engaged National Treasury with the support of the Auditor General. The Auditor General, Chair, worked with National Treasury basically to give us space and time to strengthen the controls of Transnet. And the agreement we reached with them was that instead of reporting the PFMA-related irregular expenditure issues in the financial statements, we would report them in the annual report or the integrated report. So we have a page in the report that deals with the irregular expenditure issues. What that did for us then, Chair, because the auditors would want to ensure the financials that would comply with international financial reporting standards, we ensured that happened, and we therefore received an unqualified audit opinion. However, we continue to work, Chair, on the issues of irregular expenditure, and we have been given 3 years by National Treasury to strengthen the control and ensure that transformation and reforms of our procurement environment achieve the compliance with the PFMA, and we are on that journey. We did not breach any of the covenants of our lenders in 2022, which then assisted us in continuing to engage and raise money. Chair, we had a significant bond that was maturing on the 26th of July, 2022, which was $1 billion, and we managed to successfully repay that money working with a consortium of banks, and it was quite critical for us because it would have led us to a default position had we not dealt with that. The other challenge we had faced for a number of years, Chair, was the release of results later. We are required to release the results by the end of July, by the first regulator, which is the Luxembourg Stock Exchange, and then we have other regulators soon after, but we managed to release the results within the first deadline, and we want to continue in that regard. We've made progress in the review of property investment, Chair. I think for the past years, the property of Transnet, and it's quite a significant property, was managed through a department. In 2020, we took a decision to make this a division and ensure that the property across is properly valued. And when I share the numbers, we will see the impact of this work to ensure that the property is properly valued in our balance sheet. And as we continue to deliver on the strategy, we can ensure that we are starting from the correct base. And we are implementing the strategy, Chair, the segment strategy, but I think the GCE and Dr. Shaw will come back when we talk about the outlook. If I go to the next slide, Chair, the financial performance context, and I think the Minister has also touched on this, the issues around the availability of locals that need to be resolved, and we are working on that. Security has been mentioned, cyber attacks. The other area of focus for Transnet is to ensure that we manage liquidity as we move forward with the business and raise money where required, but also ensure that we produce revenue from our operations and collect long overdue debt from various customers of ours. So those are probably the areas I wanted to highlight on this, but maybe the last three, the transformation of our procurement reforms, the supply chain, is quite critical, but we are also driving a focused approach to digitize and automate our systems, and it's quite critical for our compliance to the PFMA requirements and irregular expenditure. If I move on to the next slide, Chair, I will jump a few slides because it then gives the details of the overview that I've given two slides before in terms of what is the makeup of the numbers. And this is the picture then that is detailing the income statement that is in our financial statement, but I have spoken to all these numbers. The second slide as well is then the financial position or the balance sheet, the next slide, and I will not go through each of the numbers either, except Chair, to indicate that we did see an improvement in the value of our balance sheet, having looked at our property portfolio and ensured that it is properly valued, amongst other things. If I move to the next slide, number 21, Chair, to the matters raised by the Minister and the GCE, I think this picture just indicates the movement of goods by Transnet in volume. And in the rail space, given the locomotives, the vandalism, and other matters that were raised, we can see that our performance was not strong, and it then affected our core operational revenue that we could have delivered. And we are focusing on these matters, but from the port containers, as well as the petroleum business, we did see an improvement in both areas compared to the volumes we reported in the prior year. If I go to the next slide, Chair, it is again a detail of the savings that we made on operating expenses, which were driven by cash preservation initiatives, a reduction in provisions, but also the payment we received from McKinsey. And this is just basically the detail that indicates as well that 58% of our expenditure is related to personnel costs, followed by electricity and so on. Slide number 23, Chair, is then the detail of how we move from a loss position of 8.7 billion in 2021 to the profit position in 2022 of 5 billion. As indicated earlier, we reported an improvement in revenue of about 1.2 billion, a reduction in operating expenses of about 2.8 billion. Then we also saw a reduction on impairment provision because we had been driving a cleanup in terms of our capital work in progress, and we saw a reduction in this area, Chair, because a lot of them, the projects that were on the go, were basically areas that we wanted to focus and continue to commercial operations. The biggest improvement then comes from the fact that we had to review our property portfolio and revalue it to the correct values. The GCE has made some example, Chair, of this, but I just want to make another example where we would have worked with the private sector as an example, having given them land in the places like Richards Bay. They would have developed a mall as an example, and that lease is coming to an end. And the work that we did in 2022 financial year was to ensure that when that property comes back to Transnet, it is in the correct value, and the rental charge that we will now start entering in contracts for is going to be a fair amount in line with the value that we've created in that property. And there's quite a number of such examples. But Chair, we are also coming from the COVID-19 period where the property valuations were quite low with the challenges that we're experiencing, and we are seeing recovery in the property market. So it was a process that was driven by a team of technical experts in the property valuation space. We had it looked at by the Auditor General as well to ensure that we were comfortable. And it was about rebasing and ensuring that the property value is correct in our balance sheet. But as required by accounting standards, Chair, the impact is then put through the income statement. Hence, we see the profit increasing to 5 billion and contributing significantly to the profit that we reported. On the next slide, Chair, we highlight our engagement with the rating agencies. We work with Moody's and Standard & Poor's. We were under credit watch by Standard & Poor's. They have since removed the credit watch, specifically after we were able to pay back the bond on the 26th of July, and we have been able to raise money. We continue to work with Moody's. We are still under credit watch by Moody's, and we are working with them to engage on the credit watch. We did repay all the borrowings that were due on time, and we raised some money in the market as well. The next few slides, I will not spend time. The next slide is just to give the committee a sense of the borrowing profile of Transnet that is maturing in the coming years, and it is a focus area. These were funds that would have been raised from 2014 onwards that are maturing now, and we are monitoring the requirements to pay back or to refinance, Chair, and it is included in our corporate plan processes to ensure that we repay. Number 26, I will not spend time on, but maybe I can go to slide number 27. And Chair, here we just want to give you a sense of where did we get much value of the property as we revalued, which has improved the balance sheet. So the three significant divisions of Transnet that are carrying property is Transnet Properties itself, and the TNPA as the landlord and carries quite a significant amount of land, as well as Transnet Freight Rail. And we did this valuation of property across the business, applying a consistent standard. And going forward, Chair, we would then continue to assess this value and do the necessary requirements in our financial statement. The next slide, which is the last slide, Chair, is basically then on the compliance with the PFMA. I have already touched on this area. In our financial statement, we did not report any irregular expenditure, but if you then look at our integrated report, you would see that we have through a few pages indicated what irregular expenditure was incurred in the financial year 2022 versus the financial year 2021. We reported financial irregular expenditure of 1.1 billion in 2022 versus the 3.8 billion we had recorded the year before. And as indicated, Chair, we continue to work through strengthening the controls to reduce as much as possible any expenditure to be reported as irregular. And we will use the period that has been allocated by National Treasury to improve the controls and automate as much as possible. I will stop there, Chair. Thank you very much.
I was just looking at the time. So I just wanted you to go back to the ESG outcomes slide. So, Chair, as Vuyiswa is going to that, I'll start talking to the ESG, which is the environmental, social, and governance improvements that we've seen. On the environmental side, we monitor our carbon emissions as a group. And we have to say, honorable members, is that this is an area which is increasingly very important. Go back two slides, please. Which is increasingly an important area for banks. Another one, please. for banks when they borrow us money as Transnet. And must say that the one area of our business where we are going to have to find solutions for funding any capital investment is on any infrastructure that moves coal by virtue of the emissions. And we are watching the response on the petrol and the pipelines. Gas, at least fortuitously, there are certain a lot more of the financing institutions still regard gas as a transition fuel. But it's an area that we're watching very closely, given also the size of this business its size and importance to Transnet. And then in the near future, we will start indicating our own generation of water. And we are looking at projects that will also start looking at our own generation of electricity. On health and safety, we've been able to stay below the tolerance of 0.75 at 0.69, but we are soon going to have quite an aggressive safety campaign where we move much more towards safety, where we all undertake it as a matter of because we care about each other. Running rail derailments in the last year, 78, and these actually remain a real serious problem, reflective of the underinvestment in infrastructure maintenance. Shunting derailments, these happen within the yard. More often than not, don't have an impact on operations, but they are a health risk for people. In as far as expenditure on ESD, we spend 67 million rand. Increasingly looking at our ESD expenditure going through state-owned entities and agencies like the NEF. We've entered into a partnership and looking at also working very closely with IDZ to provide some of the support that we are supposed to provide. In early payments to qualifying ESD beneficiaries, about 378 million rand, and then the local procurement, we've been able to achieve 72% of our spend. With regards to employment, Transnet directly, the employment that this reflects the direct employment in Transnet. But one of the big things, and we, Andrew Shaw's unit, is to start looking at the economic impact of Transnet, and soon we should be able to produce a report which shows the multiplier effects, which would then start looking at the indirect impact of Transnet. Pillow Pepper, next one, we continue to provide skills, spend 655 million rand as Transnet on skills development. We remain a level 2 triple BEE enterprise, and that's an area we want to retain. Next slide, please. Community development, we remain with the foundation inside corporate affairs. I spent 139 million. The biggest chunk of our expenditure in corporate affairs is by and large the various Pillow Pepper trains. We are increasingly looking for partners to fund these because the possibility to extend the services that we provide in these trains is quite real. And as many members would know, this is actually a really important service in the more far-flung areas. And in fact, sometimes in quite seriously urbanized areas, it tends to be under serious demand. In fact, the Pillow Pepper trains are going to be out of physical commission soon as they go into their 10-year refurbishments, both of them. On Black empowerment, 78.6% of our employees are Black, women 44%, and in EXCO, and 47.4% in the extended EXCO. A disastrous performance, which we have to do much better. Our target, that's not women, it's the people with disabilities. Our target is 2.3%, and so we're achieving that, but it's unfortunate. Because the representation of people with disabilities in the country, in the total population, is at 7%. So it's an area that not just Transnet, frankly, I think the whole of us, the whole of us in South Africa, have we really got to start paying serious attention to how we support and ensure that we integrate people with disabilities into active participation in the economy. And then lastly, the expenditure on Black-owned enterprises, we spent 12.5 billion. And on EMEs, 5.14 billion. in the coming period will start showing the expenditure that we'll be paying, that we're undertaking by geographic area, because we were waiting for approval from Treasury to be able to provide direct support to expenditure in certain areas where we can designate geographically in the areas in which we have operations. Chair, I will stop here, knowing very well that we've not done the forward-looking picture, but given the time that you have given us, and hopefully in the questions that we will be asked, we will cover some of the forward-looking items. Thank you very much, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Group CEO. Thank you, Honourable Members. I think now we have received the presentation comprehensive as it is. I'm sorry and I apologize if I've put a lot of pressure on the team in their presentation. I know for a fact that this presentation has attracted a lot of members, and I've seen even members that necessarily don't belong to the committee here, and everybody would love to engage. Therefore, I will give everybody an opportunity to raise question or to make its or his or her contribution. But I must say from the start that having browsed before even the presentation, I could see that we are slowly moving towards the right direction. We are slowly improving. It might not be the type of running that you will all appreciate, but the fact of the matter is that there is a lot of improvement. Having listened even to this presentation. Therefore, before I ask members to be critical as they wish, but it's important to appreciate something positive. It's important to appreciate a progress, even if it's like a toy's progress. But the progress encourages one to continue with the work. Otherwise, if there is no progress, you're always considering giving up. But the rate of the situation is that there is a lot of improvement, Honorable Minister and the chairperson of the board. And we have to start from there. Members, let me give you an opportunity to engage, starting from Dlamini.
Morning, colleagues, and everyone. Let us welcome the report. And yes, indeed, it does paint a positive picture. But one would have loved to see a comparison between the performance of Transnet before COVID, and remember, this year is the first year of recovery post COVID. So if you look at the fact that COVID halted operations to almost a complete halt, so you would naturally expect that when operations resume, there would be some form of improvement. But one would have really appreciated to compare performance just before COVID and immediately after COVID, so that we get a real sense of what is happening, because you don't want to be over enthusiastic until the situation is not as rosy as you'd want it to be. Chair, it's worth noting for our own a portfolio committee to note that in terms of what we were expecting, we should have received an annual an APP from DPE, and we beginnings. We have Transnet now. This has caused some form of confusion building up to today. And it's interesting, Chair, to note that if DPE is not tabling its APP and the budget, how are they expected to play an oversight role to these SOEs if themselves are gravitating towards being delinquent? It's a point to note, stated here. On Transnet properties, the report seems to suggest that at some point these properties were not correctly evaluated. Now that has been corrected. Hence, to some extent, you see some positive results in that regard. But I'd want to ask, because the fact that these properties have been evaluated would suggest that in fact they have been able to locate all of them. There are quite a few properties that belong to Transnet around the Durban area, some of which have been hijacked, so to speak. What sort of measures are in place to evict those people who are occupying those properties unlawfully, who do not pay rent on those properties, who do not pay municipal services? And that's a bill that will ultimately go to Transnet. How are we dealing with that? I think on matters of TFR, each time Transnet comes, they will tell us about vandalism and cable theft. But you don't hear much in terms of the measures that have been taken to try and deal with that, because we can't keep complaining about a problem that doesn't go away. What are we doing to make the problem go away? That would be important, Chair. On the performance in terms of finances, I want to maybe understand what sort of, because the report seems to suggest that there have been some savings here and there, spending less on this, and it's a huge chunk comes from VSPs. What sort of impact do these VSPs have on the skills pool that remains with Transnet? Because remember, most people who would want to take their voluntary severance package are people with years of experience who have actually accumulated some money in terms of savings working for Transnet. Now, letting them go, is it not going to create a situation that we face at Eskom where we have to go back and beg them to come back now because we've let ourselves out of the skills pool that's necessary? Is there some form of mechanism to retain the organizational memory from the people who are actually exiting Transnet? The report wants to talk about some improvements in terms of the revenue generated, and it appears as profit. But really, if it's profit not from the actual operations, but profit from savings, how long are we expecting or hoping rather to maintain this momentum of saving going forward, so that we are able to maybe predict to a certain extent what the next few years is going to look like for Transnet? Let me go to the issue of TPL. Chair, it's almost the same as TFR, the issue of theft in the pipeline and whatnot. But we are not getting much in terms of what sort of measures we have put in place to deal with that. It becomes a problem. Now, the report wants to suggest that over, I think it's in the region of 29 billion, if my figures are correct, has been spent on BPE and Black Economic Empowerment, so to speak. Who are these companies and what do they actually do? Yes, the money is really big in terms of figures. But who are these people? What work do they do? What sort of job creation have they brought in terms of our mandate insofar as job creation is concerned? We understand Transnet has spent so much, but how much has it translated into in terms of our goals as government in terms of job creation? Now, there is a suggestion that Transnet will want to piggyback on the private sector for some of the programs that they have on the pipeline. Now, I want to maybe pose a question, looking at a specific case in Saldanha Bay. To what extent does Transnet want to leverage on the resources of the private sector if that's the plan? And to what extent does Transnet want to deal with issues of monopolies within the system? Because as we speak, there is an issue that's sitting with the Competition Commission right now about a company that was given a 27-year concession to basically be a monopoly in that space of liquid petroleum gas. And it doesn't make sense. If we can allow that to happen, what does it say for new entrants? Do they have to wait for the next 27 years? How does that fit into our transformation agenda? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Dlamini. Honorable members, first, before I give the next speaker, on the list of participants here, or people who have attended this session, there is 0169300, 0169725, blah, blah, blah. All those people, there's iPad, all of those people. I know this meeting is a public meeting, supposed to be attended by whoever would like to be part of the session. But you can't come to a meeting hiding your face. At least we must know who was part of the meeting. Therefore, while you have those identities such as 0169, we would love at least to see who are you. Therefore, I want to appeal to those members or to those people who have just to identify themselves before I take a step in relation to that. We can't have people that we don't even identify in a meeting who will come with paraclub. You are like attending a meeting with a paraclub. Okay. Honorable Kachalia.
Thank you, Chair. Please forgive me for not putting on my picture because we are suffering from load shedding here. To begin with, let me say that 45% is a high gearing ratio. I'd like to know what measures you are taking to bring this within acceptable levels, particularly given that 25% and below is considered low risk by investors. Then, in respect of the loans from banks, what are the terms of the 1 billion repayment, and what are and when is the next crunch expected? Then, how much do impairments contribute to the profitability and the state of the balance sheet, bearing in mind that this is an accounting measure, not just impairments, but also property valuations, restated property valuations and the like. How much of these measures, accounting measures, account for the profitability and the state of the balance sheet, bearing in mind that these are hardly reflective of operational improvements, which is the reality. My understanding, and please tell me if this is correct, is that bar these accounting measures, there would be a loss of 6.45 billion, which would have been presented otherwise. So please elucidate on this. Then, how are the repairs of core aspects in the business going to be made and funded? How is the expansion and scaling of logistics and distribution network going to be affected using owned assets and non-owned assets? Can you break this up? And what plans are there to sustain this financially? What current private sector partnerships have been achieved to date, and where are these in the process and with whom? How much has been spent on pipeline security, and how many incidents have there been, and what is the extent of the losses as against how much has been spent? Given the ongoing pipeline theft and spillages, what is the impact on our diesel reserves? How does the ongoing shift to road fit into your road to rail strategy, especially on the Gauteng-Durban corridor? Who, if any, party has bought into your third-party access to the rail network, given the two-year window, which is, by all accounts, does not allow for adequate amortization by the investor or the participator? In view of the increased volumes moved by TNPA of 409 units, how does this affect our placing in global rankings? Operational performance at TPT, as you say, is below expectation. What is being done to secure funding and for what improvements? In view of adverse funding, RE procurement, what is being done to remedy this and what consequences have been put in place for those responsible? In the pension fund, board members appear to have been replaced. Why and what decisions have been taken in the interim by a depleted board? And can you tell us if any funds from this pension fund are being earmarked for alternative uses? If so, how and what for? There is scant detail on security. Can we have a schedule of losses in rand terms so as to enable comparisons, improvements, if any, in this key and important area? In terms of infrastructure maintenance, you say it cannot be covered by operational income. So how much is required from what you call a government-led funding? And what does this actually entail? Those are my questions. Please answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kashalia. Now is Honorable Mawotwe.
Honorable Mawotwe. Yes. Thank you, Chair, and greetings to you and everybody. Chair, your opening remarks were suggesting that Transnet has done well. So I'm going to show you that it's not true. And it will expose the hypocrisy that is contained in the financial reports. Now, my questions, hopefully when they are answered truthfully, they will actually expose what's happening at Transnet. So to the leadership of Transnet, how far is the implementation of the plans to enable third-party access to the freight rail network? And then in your financial statements, you claimed that you generated 5 billion in profit after tax. How did you make this profit? Where did the sales come from and which commodities did you move? that contributed to this profit? What role in stock did Transnet manufacture and sell to the market? And what was the target versus what has been achieved in terms of the manufacturing of rolling stock? And which countries did you sell this product to? And how much value adjustment now in terms of the property, which is non-cash adjustment on the assets, did you declare? Why did you spend 1.6% of your training budget? What is the cost of this poor performance? And what are you going to do differently to meet the required target? In 2012, Chair, Transnet spent 3.4 billion on maintenance. And since then, Transnet has been falling short on maintenance expenditure. So how do you report 13.2 billion in fair value adjustments on property, plant and equipment on assets that are poorly maintained in the 2022 financial year? Because that declaration of the fair value adjustment is the one that ballooned and made everybody to think that you have actually made a profit when you did not. How much do you estimate today to spend on maintaining the network to retain it to the 2012 condition after having spent 3.4 billion in 2012 and really close to nothing since 2012, making the network to be so dilapidated to date? And then we see that you've also deferred payment of your creditors. Why did you defer your payment of the creditors? And what's your creditors' age analysis? And how much do you owe to your creditors? If these questions are answered fairly and truthfully, Chair, you will actually realize that there's a mess at Transnet. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mawotwe. Honorable Mkwanazi, it's your turn.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Allow me not to open the video. We'll not shed 10 to 12. Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. Greetings to the Honorable Minister, Honorable Members, team from Transnet, led by the Chairperson. Chairperson, I must firstly appreciate the report, the presentation, and the progress work done at Transnet. Chair, one of the mandates of Transnet is to enable economic growth. Through that, Chair, if Transnet through the board chairperson can elaborate on that and the work done by Transnet to improve there, but also what is what effects has Transnet did or done to secure its how has decline in global economic growth affected the implementation of Transnet Africa strategy in talking to the economic growth? Secondly, Chair, for me, if Transnet can talk to its security plan, working with other stakeholders and departments to deal with the issues of cable theft and vandalism. And to that extent, what is Transnet doing to secure its railway network, which has been affected by vandalism and theft? For me, Chair, I would like the Transnet CEO to talk to the consequence management that has been in place to deal with the irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure and the Auditor General's report. And if the board has plans to address the challenges faced by operating division during this financial year. Chair, Honorable Lamine has covered most of that ground for me, especially the before and the after COVID comparison. I think that can also assist the committee to understand the progress made. Fifthly, Chair, for me, as regards the performance against the Shareholders' Compact, Transnet only achieved 17 of out of 44, it's according to the report, the target. And I would like to understand the DPE a plan to hold the board to account so far, and the plan of the DPE is part of their oversight to work or to assist Transnet as part of the oversight mandate. Lastly, Chair, Transnet net profit cost to the cost savings measures, including voluntary payouts. As a result, there was a reduced employee headcounts. And Chair, I would love that to be I'm sorry about that, Chair. I'm still recovering from a terrible flu, and my voice is still recovering. And how this employee reduction will assist Transnet to maintain its competitive advantage. And they're sitting here, how this reduction in employees talks to the issue of the mandate of, especially of the SOEs and the Transnet to talk to the issue of employment and skills development. Thank you, Chair, for now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Kwanazi. Speedily recover. I know you have been having flu. Honorable Isaac.
Good morning, Chairperson and colleagues. Chairperson, just to be brief, lots has been covered. I'd just like to check, there's a mention been made of the extension in terms of the duration of the debt portfolio. Now, what I'd like to find out is that has an assessment been done on this extension on the debt portfolio, and what is the impact then going to be eventually on the balance sheet? Then I'd also like to just find out to what extent is the spend on external consultants within Transnet currently, because I haven't heard anything in detail on that. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Isaac. Honorable Buthelezi, though I haven't seen that name, but I felt it's important, maybe it's one of those who come in disguising with numbers. Honorable Chairs is not there. Honorable Piri. And I didn't see Honorable Piri either. Let me go to Honorable Komani.
Thank you very much, Chair. And good morning, honorable members and other members of the Transnet and the ministry. Chair, let us just start by asking, in terms of the profits that are made by Transnet, because what they are saying is contrary to what is being said by the National Treasury's Budget Office. And because it is opposing the statement that they have been making profit. So maybe if they can speak and elaborate to the committee, we may be put up to speed in that. And then, Chair, I want to also echo the sentiments to say we need to know what were the terms and conditions of the repayment of the 1 billion that was that is due to be paid by Transnet. Chair, again, one would then ask, what is the Transnet doing, or what measures are being put in place to control the spillage of the diesel in Transnet? Because they keep on telling us of the challenges of the spillage, but there's no control systems put into place that they have indicated to us. Chair, in terms of the training budget as well, it little has been done to meet the target. And we have got such, we are in a country of less skills, particularly towards Transnet. Why could they not meet the target? And what measures are they putting into place? And are they going to be able to meet the target or this training target? And then another point, Chair, is that I think I echo the sentiment of the latter speakers to say we cannot only celebrate the performance after the COVID, we should also measure it and compare it between the before and the after. Then we can then, if there is anything to celebrate, by the way, we can celebrate. But for now, we are not in a position to can say anything, but we need to be put up to speed as to what was what performance was there before COVID and what is it that is it now. And Chair, in terms of the cable theft, this has been ongoing in our oversight, in the presentations of Transnet. They have been alluding to this matter. But then one would then ask, what is Transnet saying to us? Are they losing the battle to cable theft? If they're not losing this battle, what is it that they're doing? And what is the role of other security cluster role players with ESCOM? What is it that they are doing? Maybe if they can explain to us what is happening there, maybe one would then be in a position to try and understand. And but last but not least, Chair, it was there's this challenge of property belonging to Transnet, which is alleged to be illegally occupied. But I think it's now a time that Transnet should take us into confidence of what is happening, because some of those people who are claimed to be illegally occupying those houses are in fact not illegally occupying. Transnet knows what is happening. So maybe they can, if they can speak to that item, Chair. And lastly, to the DPE, Chair. DPE is not submitting their report in time. And it is a very serious worrying factor. And we as members of parliament, we as committee, we are expecting the very same department to do oversight. So their failure to submit the report, how does this failure impact on their oversight to Transnet? Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Komani. Honorable Malinga. Malinga, I thought you were here. I saw you, Malinga, in this. Apparently, Malinga is no longer there. Okay. She disappeared. Okay. Let's have Honorable Shabalala, the last.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and good morning to members of parliament and everybody in the meeting, DPE and Transnet board. Chair, I want to ask a few questions. Firstly, to say, there has been the decrease in volumes in that is attributed to incidents of cable theft, power failures. And I want to say I'm very irritated today with this power failure, Chairperson. But anyway, we'll try to compose ourselves. It is what it is. So this, decrease in volumes, that is attributed to incidents of cable theft, power failures, vandalism, derailments, and defective railway lines, to name but a few. The entity should be in a position to explain to us how these challenges will be resolved in the current financial year. We've been raising these issues. Can we just get perhaps a better written strategy properly that tells us how you're going to deal with these matters? I think Transnet must tell us how it intends to increase female representation in the operation division, because we acknowledge and realize that you are not doing well when it comes to that. You can speak to your HR issues. There is, due to this inefficiency of the rail network, companies have shifted their goods from rail to road. How is the company addressing this shift going forward? But I want to align that question with a question about moving from rail from road to rail. Now we can see that due to this inefficiencies of rail network, companies have resorted to taking goods from rail to road, of which is causing serious problems on the road. But what is the strategy? When is Transnet going to tell us and map us properly from a policy point of view, but also give us a plan? What are you going to do to ensure that we move from road to rail? It's very critical. The entities allowing third-party access to its rail network, however, Transnet has received criticisms from the private sector that its third-party access policy is not aligned to the government's national rail policy, and that the investment period of 2 years is too short to make significant returns on the investment required by the rail network. So I would like to hear what will be the Transnet comment on these criticisms that it's receiving. How is it receiving it, and what is it doing about it, if there's any issue there? The decline in global economic growth has affected the implementation of Transnet Africa strategy. Can Transnet elaborate on that Africa strategy, if they can just take us through? There is members of Transnet board that are serving as board members for the newly created TNPA board. When will the TNPA have its own board members, if you can be explained? I think my last point, Transnet should inform committee on the challenges faced by the operating division during this year. How will it be addressed in the current financial year? And really issues that we have been raising over time throughout our oversight about the delayed procurement, which negatively impact on the work environment of employees, if that has been addressed. Because you will remember when we did oversight at the Transnet Port of Cape Town, issues were raised regarding aging infrastructure and delays in midlife refurbishments, which has led to the increased breakdowns. What has Transnet done to ensure that necessary funds have been invested in replacing the aging infrastructure and that the necessary midlife refurbishment have been done? Okay, I said that was my last point, my truly last one. The matter, Mrs. Portia, and I'm going to keep on raising it. Perhaps I must state my name. My name is Judith Chabalala. I reside in Joburg. I've got a parliamentary constituency office in Johannesburg. And in that constituency office in Johannesburg, you are the property owner of Transnet in Railway there in Booysens. And that Booysens, there's an informal settlement that has been taken over by foreign illegal nationals. I want to know, what is it that you're going to do? As a member of parliament, we have been engaged with stakeholders in trying to really bring this issue to the fore and see what needs to be done. Every time we call Transnet, we call PRASA. Transnet is the one that keeps on changing officials that comes to that meeting. Every time a new official has to start afresh, not knowing what are the issues there. So I really implore you to really tell us, this is your property, they're being vandalized. Beside that, you are the landlord. BRASA has has leased from you. You have a responsibility towards that infrastructure. So really need you to come and speak to the issue of Transnet. If needs be, please send your highly people that can be able to give me answers on this issue of Booysens informal settlement, or rather that property that you own. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chabalala. Honourable members, let me apologize. I almost forgotten one of the members of this portfolio committee. As to why, I don't know. Honourable Kumede, I'm sorry, my brother.
Good morning to everyone, especially to you, Chair. I think that love I expected, it's there, it's gone. I'll accept your apology. Chair, let me start by saying that we, in fact, all of us, do congratulate the Transnet, in fact, for the achievement that they've achieved in terms of the unqualified audit findings. Chair, may I once again say, Transnet, Eskom, as well as Dinel, I want them to go very much deep in their minds. If we may talk that it remains indelible, let it do so, so that they understand this. You know, these three entities, my view, my understanding, my perception is that, in fact, they are the pillars of the enterprises, the DPE. I think if we can get those three to improve, obviously the image of the department will in fact change. I'm so appealing that at least now Transnet is shifting, it's going towards a positive goal. I'm expecting that perhaps the next year or this current year, Dinel may give us something positive. I know Eskom, difficult as it may be, some of the information that we've all shared, it looks promising, but at times it is the implementation that talks. You may have strategies, you may have good plans, but if you don't implement, and these things will always give you a negative kind of the outcome. So that's what, Chair, firstly, I wanted to say, to make comment on. Chair, the second thing that I want to comment on is that the highlights of audit is in the unpacking of all these irregular expenditure, the losses, and all those things. You know, it's been unfortunate, you know, unfortunately, I haven't got that much of accounting understanding. In fact, when the exemptions were given to the entity, though, in terms of the irregular and all those expenditures, I want to believe, Chair, that that's a deferment of an accurate findings, my understanding, not unless I'm corrected. You know, it's a similar thing like, which perhaps next time I would like to be educated on it, the APIDA. Then, in fact, I want to believe that it's robbing us as well in terms of the profits, the revenue, because all those things are happening before the deductions of taxes and whatever, whatever. And you show a very good figure, whereas all these deductions are done, then it cuts the profits that would have been shown to us. As much as Miss, I'm not sure whether Miss Nkululeko Dlamini has talked about it, but I would like to be given a very clear understanding that, in fact, how does it work? Are we not deferring the accuracy of perhaps the findings? Chair, the other one that worries me is the consequence management. It looks as if within the entity, it's very weak, and the management looks very much unwilling to discipline members. I'm worried, what's causing that? What's the reason that we have management not very much willing to discipline? You know, it takes me to a point where the cleanup, it's in fact very much critical, and it is necessary at this stage, especially when Transnet is busy building up, cleansing itself, trying to achieve the accolades that they've moved from the disclaimers, they've moved from the qualified, they are now on unqualified, they eventually want to go to a very clean audit where there would be very minimal, because we cannot have a situation where everything is just clean. But if we do that, just look at, don't we have the remnants of the state capture? You know, when you read the reports, it does tell you that there are other things that happen, there are things that have happened that ought not to have happened. And they are very clear that kunesandla semfene at times. So those are all things that you need, in fact, to scrutinize, look at it. And if there are things that you suspect and they are untoward, please do deal with such elements in a sense. I appreciate the strategy that is growth and renewal strategy. The only fear and concern is that it talks more of the involvement of the private sector. I'm not sure whether the work that may be identified, it may be too complicated. The worry that I have is how does it perhaps commensurate with the idea of cost-cutting measures, the use of a small business? Isn't that perhaps those private sectors may begin to take a bigger share for some other people to share in terms of developing their expertise and skills? Cost-cutting measures, Chair. You know, I'm saying not always that the cost-cutting measures are positive, especially in dealing with the employees. You know, I just want to give the advice that yes, as much as we do cut, let us not cut to the bones, because at times it does weaken the entity, especially in terms of performance. Chair, let me bring in a new element here. It's an element that we have never thought of. I would like to see the collaboration between the TE, that is Transnet Engineering, and DE, which in fact I'm not sure whether I'm coining this one, that is Dinel Engineering. And I want to see what in fact could come up if those two are together in terms of boosting the image of perhaps the department. Chair, let me wait there. I'm thankful that eventually you did remember that in fact you had omitted myself. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you.
Oh, sorry, I was speaking without unmuting. Honorable members, I think I've covered all the names in my list who are supposed to belong to this committee. But now I think I will ask Ms. Tele to remove all these unidentifiable gadgets with no names, 0169300 0169 75 0170 0540 I will ask her to remove them with immediate effect. Going back to the Transnet, and the minister can start, or I don't know how the arrangement will be. There are questions that, of course, directed to the minister. I think the minister must start and give over thereafter to the group CEO and the team. Minister?
Thank you, Chair. I'll also keep the video off. But thank you very much to all the honourable members for both the suggestions and the questions that they've asked. Let me clarify right up front that there seems to be some confusion between the APP and the annual report from several members. The APP was long completed earlier in the year and submitted to the committee. What you will be waiting for is the annual report, for which the parliamentary deadline is the 30th of September. The report is ready, but we haven't had occasion yet to just submit it to yourselves. So let us not create the impression that we haven't done what we are supposed to do. The second point, several colleagues have raised the question of the vandalism, theft, and asking for what is the Transnet strategy. Let me say up front that this is a matter that the state as a whole has to deal with, and in particular the law enforcement part of the state. There is a serious effort being put in by the South African Police Service and other agencies of the state to begin to tackle this particular problem of vandalism and theft, and special measures are being put in place by the state. But secondly, there are parts of the network where the private sector itself is collaborating with Transnet, particularly on the coal line or the northern line, and providing security assistance in that particular regard as well. So there's good collaboration as far as that is concerned. And then thirdly, you'd be aware that the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition is also dealing with the question of the export of scrap metal and under what conditions it should be banned. And that's a matter that is also before Parliament at the moment. But pretty soon, government will put in place the necessary measures once the public consultations have been undertaken. And that will begin to make a huge difference as well. So what I think is important, if I may make the suggestion to this committee, is that it should join hands with other committees in Parliament and support the idea of a ban on export of copper and other metals under certain conditions, and also new measures that the DTIC will be suggesting in terms of their strategy that has been developed on the scrap metal side. And I think once these come into effect, they will certainly make a big difference as far as this whole question is concerned, and begin to limit the market, so to speak, for the stolen products themselves. Of course, the South African Revenue Service is also part of this arrangement, so that at the ports of entry and exit in South Africa, there are sufficient controls in place to ensure that these new measures are properly implemented as well. The questions raised by Mr. Kachalia, I think, are largely directed to the CFO and others, so I'm just scanning them quickly, Chair. Road to rail is an important policy area. Our colleagues in Transnet will give you a report on that. This has been seriously disrupted because of the floods and the impact on rail, on the one hand, but also the condition of the container line. And some new thinking is going into how best this line should be adjusted, to put it broadly, in order to enable the road to rail strategy to actually work, because it's easier said than done. However, one of the difficulties, as the colleagues in Transnet will point out, is that rails, certainly at this point in time, takes a slightly longer duration of time to get a container from Durban to Gauteng than road would at this stage. But these are matters that they are actually dealing with. Then, as far as Honorable Mahatwe is concerned, it's a pity that she always starts on a negative note, but there's very transparent explanations, and it was part of the earlier presentation, as to how the 5 billion rand profit was arrived at, but the colleagues of Transnet can put up that slide again for her benefit. And several colleagues have raised the question of third-party access and the two-year limitation. There's benchmarking being done in this particular regard, but I've encouraged Transnet to engage in negotiations so that they can find some understanding between themselves and others who are interested. But I think we should be all aware that different parties have different interests when it comes to an important issue like this. Some would like a complete free for all and would want to have no limitations whatsoever and have their own way. And others will approach this in a different kind of way. So let's be aware that different interests have to be ultimately balanced out in this particular regard. On the property valuation question, which again was raised by several colleagues, our Transnet colleagues will give some attention to that as well as we go forward. I want to categorically contest that there is a mess at Transnet. There is no mess. There is a systematic effort over the last few years, and it will continue for the next few years, because state capture and malfeasance is not overcome overnight. There are various institutions in the country that are going through similar processes of rehabilitation, reorganization, and revitalization. And Transnet has done fairly well, as far as I'm concerned, in that particular regard. Honorable Mkhwanazi also raised the question of the security plan. I want to refer her to my earlier comments that this is not just a Transnet issue, that it has been accepted by government, that this is a countrywide and government-wide issue. And we would certainly agree that a lot more assertive work needs to be done by the law enforcement agencies in order not just to catch the ordinary guy or person who steals a couple of meters of cable, but the actual people who are running the syndicates. And all of us should join in our voice and in our actions against the real orchestrators of infrastructure theft and damage, which is holding up the performance of many of our institutions, both within DPE and outside of DPE as well. we continue, excuse me, to hold the board to account in terms of the performance. in line with the compact, and we'll present a report on that in due course. Honorable Khomani, I'm not aware of any commentary from National Treasury in relation to the contestation around profit, but Chair, if you can provide us with some material which indicates that's the case, then we'll set up the right dialogue with Treasury to clear that up. The question of the report, or I've clarified the difference between the APP and the annual report. There's still many days in September left, but we'll do this sooner rather than later. And Honorable Shabalala, the power failures irritate all of us. And as we've explained, there's no easy answers, I'm afraid, at the moment, except that Eskom generation must certainly do much better at ensuring that the kind of mishaps that they had at Coburg in the last few days are mishaps that should be avoided. So I'll certainly join you on that. Similarly, you raised the issue of cables and how we're dealing with that, and I've answered that earlier on as well. I've also responded to the road to rail strategy. The strategy is fine, and as you correctly point out, the execution is something that needs a lot more attention. And we would share the concern that the N3 is becoming clogged with trucks carrying containers, amongst other commodities, and there's some urgency in dealing with this matter. We've encouraged Transnet to venture into Africa. So as far as the Africa strategy is concerned, there's some very concrete results in Kenya that the colleagues in Transnet will describe for you, and in Ghana as well. But they will also explain to you some of the challenges of fragmentation on the continent itself that holds us back. So there are areas where further cooperation is required from different countries to make this possible. On the TNPA board, that is a matter that we are attending to, and hopefully in the next month or so, we'll get back to you on that. Then Honorable Gumede, I think you are right to congratulate Transnet, so thank you for that. And you've identified correctly, as you call them, the pillars of the enterprises that the state runs. And we're very mindful of the urgency with which we need to get these entities to operate in the right way, as you are correct as well. But the management team and the boards in these entities are also clear that plans don't give you results. It's implementation that gives you results at the end of the day. Let me also say, Chair, that the matter of irregular expenditure is under very serious discussion between the AG's office, the Accountant General's office, and various other role players, because that concept is often abused to suggest all sorts of things. But in the case of SOEs that have been impacted by state capture, it was important that the Auditor General ring fences past irregular expenditure or irregular expenditure that was undertaken during the capture period, which must still be dealt with in accordance with whatever prescripts apply at a particular point in time, versus irregular expenditure within the audited period that we might be looking at. And I think there's been some movement in that regard, so that's good news. But Honorable Gumede is certainly right that getting rid of one form of state capture doesn't mean that we've got rid of corruption, and corruption and state and other forms of capture can be seen in different parts of the state as well. as individuals and entities and businesses attempt to extract as much as they can from the state in different forms at different levels in order to profiteer and lead a grand lifestyle. Your caution around cost cutting is a valid one, but at the same time, what we need is the right balance, which would ensure that the cost base of the big entities is a manageable one, and that an inordinate cost base mustn't impact negatively on the tariffs that are charged either to households or to businesses themselves as well. Your point around collaboration between TE and Danel is something that we're promoting at the moment. And then once those discussions have advanced a bit more, and you're absolutely right to pinpoint that, we can certainly share some of the findings of the officials in that particular regard. So I thought I should tackle those questions, Chairperson. And now let me hand over to the Chair of the Board and his team. Thank you.
Chair, I think we should return to Nonkululeko and Portia and Andrew Shaw, Dr. Andrew Shaw, to deal with some of the factual issues which were indicated in the questions that were raised by the honorable members. I think let's leave it at that so that we attempt to deal quickly with the issues. I may just briefly deal with consequence management issues. I don't know if Sandra is with us here, Portia. If she is, she can deal on a factual basis with what we have done with regard to consequence management, either relating to state capture issues, disciplinary matters within the organization, recovery of the monies which were lost by the organization as a consequence of all of that. She might want on a factual basis to make reference to that because I don't have documents here in front of me where I am. There was reference to the possible existence of remnants of state capture facilitators within the organization. And as the minister pointed out, this is a long process. It's not something that we can resolve overnight. But Chairperson, it's important that honorable members also appreciate that we are running a commercial organization. And we, whilst we are dealing with the effects of the state capture, we are also careful not to deal with these matters in a manner that suggests that the board and management don't trust people who are in the organization, as a result of which we create an environment of fear and panic, which may impact on the productivity of the employees. So to the extent that these matters have to be dealt with, it must be evidence-based. As and when evidence emerges affecting specific individuals, actions will be taken. But we don't want it to be like we're now searching in the whole organization for the ghosts of state capture, because we need to have a measure of stability in the organization in order to be able to perform effectively. The There's an issue raised about gender equity. I think we can refer back to the documents of Transnet, but I think Transnet is one of the leading organizations in promoting gender equity. I mean, if you just look at the top structure of Transnet now, the GCE is a woman, the GCFO a woman, the head of Transnet Business Development is a woman. So we've got a whole lot of them in our structures, but we can go to the statistics. And even the statistics as at management, top management level, I think it shows a 44% achievement. And at other layers broadly, it indicates 47% achievement. I think if you take that and compare it to where Transnet was 3-4 years ago, you'd realize that there is an extensive achievement in this connection. So so I think it is important that even as we were hard on Transnet, we also give recognition to some of the achievements that have been established. Chairperson, I think we should then return to management, the executive team, to deal specifically with some of the factual issues that have been raised in this regard. Well, in the questions raised by honourable members.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Can I proceed? What I'd like to do, I don't think Advocate Kassir is in the meeting. She's dealing with pushing hard on some of these other legal matters that we need to close on, but we'll see whether she comes on. But I'd like to ask the following executives who are on the call. If Dumi Machecha, if you can go ahead and sort of answer all of the people-related issues, including consequence management as well, please. And then I'd like Andrew Shaw to cover the issue on the PSPs, as well as the issues around road to rail as a policy. Ruzani will talk in detail to the question that members are asking around what TFR is actually doing with regards to dealing with cable theft and resolving that. And then I'd like Michelle Phillips, please, to talk to the issue of fuel theft and the impact that it has, and all of the other questions that are directly related there too. And then towards the end, I'll ask Nonkululeko to come up to speak on all of the financial questions, and I'll revert on whatever other outstanding matters there may be, Chair. Dumi, please, if you can just, we can be quick about it.
All right. No, thank you very much, Poshia, and good morning, Chair, Minister, the Chair of the Transnet Board, board members, committee members, and colleagues. I think Poshia has already introduced me. My role is that of the Chief of Learning, People and Learning. There were a couple of questions that were posed that are people related. The first one was posed by Honorable Dlamini with respect to the VSP process. And I just wanted to put some few facts on the table. The process was started in August 2021 and we closed off the applications in September. And we've had about 2,669 colleagues leaving. But from a context point of view, I think important to note that is against a headcount staff establishment of 54,000, the 2,669. The colleagues have exited the organization by the end of, I think, July this year. We had the last cohort leaving. The majority of these colleagues were train drivers and train drivers in the most, and we had other people from functions leaving. However, we've been fortunate that over the last few years, We've had programs, particularly on the operations side, where we have been bringing in, you know, assistant train drivers through the Transnet Academy. So yes, there was probably a gap for a while, but that gap has been suitably filled by the people that come through the Transnet Academy in terms of the programs that we have. So another point that I wanted to make is that, and this is the other side of the coin with respect to exits of experienced people, in that it has given the young people a chance for upward mobility. As an example, your assistant train drivers now are able to apply for train driving jobs. And we are also able to create work for South Africa, in that as those move up, they become more senior in the organization, we are able to recruit more and therefore contributing to the employment levels of our country. Honorable Umpile was also asking around the training spend, and I think we all know that for the last 2 years we've been impacted by COVID, particularly in the last year in the financial year that we're reporting under, where we have social distancing, and most of our training is face-to-face, because you are talking about engineers, you're talking about artisans, technicians, train drivers. So we've had to come up with interesting ideas of how do we train people and still be within the regulations that have been pronounced over the last 2 years through the pandemic. However, we continue to work hard to close the gaps that we've had. We haven't really had issues in terms of licensing, because we were in touch and were speaking with the regulators that also relaxed some of the requirements due to the COVID-19 regulations. Honorable Mkhwanazi asked around the PFMA. I must say, Chair, that we are on top of this process. And what we have done, Chair, is that we've designed a process that distinguishes between performance-related issues and dishonesty-related transgressions, because I think the law sometimes, or the processes sometimes, tend to lump the two together. So we are, you know, looking at the majority of those violations, and we are training our people, because we believe that it's only in very, very few cases that we have detected fraud and dishonesty, and that I'll deal with a little bit later. But we are serious about dealing with issues of malfeasance in that regard. So we have significantly reduced the transactions. Also from a disciplinary management point of view, and I'll come with stats a little bit later in terms of how that looks like. Honorable Komani asked a question also related to skills development, and happy to announce that now, with the advent of the establishment of an accredited Transnet Academy, we now have a helicopter view of what training is required in the organization, and we are working at speed to accelerate the training that has to happen in the organization, and we will indeed meet the target, if not exceed the targets going forward, now that we have some sense of normalcy vis-a-vis COVID. Honorable Nemazinga Chabalala asked the question around women. I think the chair covered that to a large extent. I think we have made strides at the senior level. Yes, there is a challenge that we continue to have at an operational level. And as a result, we've got programs that are focused on creating a solid benchmark there. And we have programs like logistics, women in operations, young leaders program, supervisory development program. And this sees thousands and thousands of our employees going through that. And that gives us the bench strength to be able to promote women in the organization. The second part of that is that we continue to emphasize the hiring of women in that space as well. So our YPTs, our young professionals program, you'd see that most of the people that come through there are women, and those find themselves permanent job in the organization to a large extent. Engineering program, technicians, artisans. So we've got all these programs which we use to bring in women into the organization, but not only for Transnet, because we can't continue to absorb at the expense of bloating the headcount. We also develop those people for South Africa and the economy, and we've also got cadet programs on the maritime side. The other one that I wanted to cover quickly is the issue of consequence management and disciplinary action. In fact, we did prepare a parliamentary question to that effect recently. We've had a chair in the last while, the last three financial years, 159 suspensions. And out of that 159 suspensions, 91 employees were dismissed. The rest, which is 68, got different sanctions from demotion, suspension without pay, 12 months written warning, etc. So we are obviously, as the chair said, having to balance our approach vis-a-vis, you know, people development and disciplinary action. I think she has covered most of the questions that I picked up, and I'll hand over then to Portia. Thank you very much.
Andrew, could you come in on your questions, please?
Sure. Thank you very much. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, Honourable Chairperson of the Transnet Board, and all the members of the committee. I'm going to talk very briefly to where we stand in respect to the strategy, and particularly the PSP transactions that we've initiated across Transnet. The first thing perhaps to say is that the nature of the transactions in all instances are partnerships. So we are therefore very keen to pursue transactions that bring real value to Transnet. And that often requires that we go through a process of engaging with the market, identifying what is in both parties' interests, and then concluding in a very fair and transparent process the outcome of that transaction. And unfortunately, that does take time. So from the perspective of could we move these faster, we're moving them as fast as we can within the constraints of our governance process. They fit within our market segment facing strategy. So the focus is on automotive, containers, coal, iron ore, manganese, chrome and magnetite, energy, which includes gas, and agriculture. Just to give you a sense of some of the big ones and the key ones, we have a number of transactions in the container market. We see the container area as, and this fits into the road to rail strategy, we see containers as an area where we would like to work much more closely with the private sector. Very often, in fact, in almost all cases, the private sector, through the shipping lines, through the logistics service providers, they own the freight in transit, and it's often moved within a container. We would like to partner with this community in such a way that they have a real benefit to their own supply chains of bringing us some of this freight onto the rail network, into some of our hubs, through some of our ports. So in respect of the PSPs, there's two key port-related container PSPs. The first is the Devon Container Terminal DCT Pier 2, and the second is Coho Container Terminal. In both instances, we are very far progressed. We've gone through an RFI process. We have a shortlisted bidder list, and we are now progressing as rapidly as we can the RFP process to close that out within the next few months. On this, in the same segment, which is containers, we have third-party access on three key corridors. The first is Gauteng to Durban, the second is Gauteng to East London, and the third, Gauteng to Kubatha. In all instances, we have received a number of interested submissions from the private sector, a significant number. So there is definite interest. Yes, there are questions, and one has to be clear that given the status of our network, we can't always offer the reliability that we would like. And secondly, to say is that we managed the two-year rule on the basis of what was done internationally. We may or may not have to review some of those elements to bring some of the parties onto the network, but we see a real opportunity to bring a lot of freight back to rail by involving third-party providers. So we see this as a key part of our strategy, and we align completely with the with the white paper on rail reform. In fact, we've seconded four people from Transnet into the Department of Transport to help manage the process of developing an integrated rail plan. So we're very committed to this process. The second area of our key transaction is in manganese. The 16 million ton per annum export facility at the Port of Tuka. This is progressing well. A key player from our side is Transnet Port Terminals, and we wish to engage with pre-qualified bidders. The EIA process is approved. So we again feel that we're moving as rapidly as we can on this transaction. Natural gas is through TNPA at the Port of Richards Bay. Again, RFPs have been issued. We wish to progress this also rapidly. Bukhobai, which is a Northern Cape port, for the most of you probably be aware, on the West Coast. The focus here is to try and talk to its location and integrating it into the Transnet network. An RFP has been issued to the market. We await responses from the market, and we've already had some interest in terms of how we can develop this port as an integral part of developing the Northern Cape. In respect of iron ore, we have the sale of wagons, considerable number of wagons within the iron ore corridor, which is from Sishen to Saldanha. We think that we can use this as a way of generating significant returns to Transnet, which we can then invest elsewhere. We also have, again, significant interest, particularly from the mining community. So we hope to be able to close that off quite rapidly. I think I've covered the main ones. There are a number of smaller transactions that we can talk to in detail, but those are the ones that I think will be of real interest to the committee. So thank you very much. If I can hand back to you, Portia.
Chair, may I please ask for Ruzani to explain the security issues. And Ruzani, hopefully you have the exact details of the dates on when we allow third party access. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Pusha, and good afternoon to the chair and everyone. I'm just going to deal with the issue of security. And I think I just want to start by echoing the sentiments from the minister that, you know, this is a big issue that nationally we need to deal with it. I think just to give number of the figures, so there's a couple of our own corridors that have been hit hard by the issue of cable theft. Right at the top of the list is the container corridor at 44%. So 44% of the incidents that are happening in the country are happening on the container corridor. There's a corridor that starts from Devon all the way to Johannesburg. This is basically the very strategic line that we have that carries or connects the two big economies, which is Gauteng and Devon. So 44% are happening there, and then followed by the North Corridor, which is the corridor is 30%, which is the corridor that is coming from Lephalale all the way to Richards Bay. This carries our coal. This is our biggest contributor to our numbers as Transnet. So 30% of incidents are happening there. And most importantly, third in line is then the Central Corridor, which is the centralmost part of Johannesburg, which really plays an important role in terms of connecting all the other corridors. So I just thought, let me just paint that picture in terms of how severe these issues are. So in terms of what we are doing, there are a couple of issues, and you will see that some of them involve other parties as well nationally. So the first one is we've realized that the way in which we contract, especially our service providers on security, has not been what it should be. So what I mean is that you'll find that we'll have a service provider and to guard, i.e. our line, and you find that still the cable gets stolen. There hasn't been, the way we contracted it, we did not include in it issues of penalties or issues of incentives if we find that the service provider does do well. So what we have done now, there's something that we call outcome-based security. What it seeks to achieve is that we are in the business of running trains. So if a line we need to run 10 trains, as an example, if we run 10 trains without any disturbance from security, we then are able to even incentivize, the service provider in terms of the fact that we manage to run the 10 trains that we need to run. But anything that disturbs us running the 10 trains, we then have to impose penalties on the service providers. And we then make it the business of the service provider to bring anything that they need is necessary, or to collaborate whoever that they need is necessary to make sure that our lines are protected. So that is the one key, you know, thing that we're doing to really change our contracting with the different service providers. The second part as well is that STFR, we've recently established an essential essential infrastructure task team unit, which is in all provinces where we are part of, which is started by the commissioner. So this is a task team that deals with all essential infrastructure. You know, I think you would have heard the GCE talking about the collaboration with other parties like Eskom and Telkom and all of those. So that is that task team that we are part of. But over and above that, we are also chair of the Infrastructure Crime Forum, where we're bringing all of these parties as well together to deal with these issues of crime as well. There's a close collaboration that we're doing with SAPS that is also helping in this matter as well. But third to it is that we've also, our customers have come in as well to really come and help us with some of the, you know, security related issues. For example, we have customers on the Kulan and other corridors as well, where they've given additional 89 additional, you know, task team and 35 drones, where we're using technology to really deal with this particular issue. And I must say that we have seen a drastic drop in the incidents. However, what the GCE has said is that we are seeing, despite that, being hit in very critical areas, where as much as you do see a drop in the number of incidents, but the fact that you are hitting critical areas, you are still seeing that we are, there seem to be an organized element in people specifically hitting us in areas where they know that it will hurt us the most. So those are the things that we are currently dealing with. But also over and above that is that internally as well, you know, it's not only the issue of cable theft that has hit us hard, it's even the vandalism of our locomotives. So there as well, there's a concerted effort where we are coming up with new technology to strengthen, you know, some of the casing that covers the batteries, even the traction motors where cables are stolen. But over and above that, we also are making accessibility to our service roads. So service roads are the roads that runs next to the railway line, where it makes it quicker to respond to incidents. So we've realized that our roads were not in a good state. So the easily accessibility of the roads will make sure that even the patrolling of the lines becomes much more efficient. But most importantly, that has happened recently is that as Transnet, we have been through the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, they've approved Transnet security officers to be granted a peace officer status. Now, this was done on the 5th of August. What this means, it means that we have officers internally within Transnet that can make arrests, that can assist the National Prosecution Authority in terms of prosecution. They can do searches, they can open dockets. They can also go as far as, you know, even doing assisting in investigations. So we see this as a step in the right direction, because it means that internally we then will have or create internal capability to really deal with these matters over and above, you know, relying on the national SAPS in this case. Just to mention some of the figures of what improvement we've seen, but remember this improvement. Given the fact that, you know, we are seeing these syndicates becoming much more organized, you may find that they don't necessarily directly relate to the increase in tonnages. Because that's the next question that will come to say, if you are seeing a reduction, where are the tonnages? It's because of the element that I've just mentioned about being hit in very critical areas. So you will see in, just to mention the length of cable stolen, in the month of year to date, we've seen a reduction of 28% of the length of cable stolen. Last year, this time, we were sitting at 582,000 meters. We are currently sitting at 518,000 meters. That's the number of cable that you know, has been stolen. It has reduced. We've also seen the number of incidents reducing by 24% as well in the different corridors as well. So I think perhaps, let me just pause there, you know, as, you know, indicating some of the key areas that we have, you know, seen an improvement on. Thank you.
Thanks, Rosanna. And Michelle, you'll be next, and then immediately after Michelle, Nonkululeko, you can take over the financial ones, and then I'll follow after you. Nonkululeko, you go ahead. Apologies, Honorable Chair. Michelle is on site, and I think she's having serious connection problems. So we'll, and I just wanted Michelle to talk in greater detail around Transnet pipelines, all of the questions that have been asked around its operational performance, the issues of vandalism on their side and fuel theft, the impact that it has, if any, in the Gauteng area, and then their response in terms of upgrading the security and the initiatives that they have for security. Hopefully she'll be able to join before I follow up after Nonkululeko. If not, we will cover the questions in the process, but I just thought you'd get a little bit more detail if she was answering. Nonkululeko, if you can please go ahead.
Thank you, Portia. Honorable members, honorable chair, I will just go through the questions as not in a particular order. Honorable Gumede asked about the PFMA exemption and what it means and whether it represents accurate reporting or not. Chair, the reporting of irregular expenditure is still as detailed as it was when we reported it in the financial statements. We submitted to the portfolio committee two books. One is called Financial Statement and another is called Integrated Report. Chair, if you look on page 121 of the book called Integrated Report, we have disclosed all the irregular expenditure that would have been incurred in the financial year and any wasteful expenditure, but the focus, Chair, for Transnet being the strengthening of the control and ensuring that we don't incur significant irregular expenditure going forward. It does not represent a chair in accurate reporting because the financial statements and the value that would have been received in relation to whatever expenditure we incurred would have been looked at by the auditors, and there would have been confirmation that the disclosure we made in the financial statement is correct and accurate. It is basically in which book we have disclosed that information that is probably different in relation to the exemption. And on the questions that were raised, Chair, by Honorable Komani, Honorable Chabalala, as well as Honorable Isaac, in relation to debt portfolio, we have a slide in the presentation that was shared with the committee that is slide number 25 that indicates, Chair, the profile of our debt and when it matures. We have split the information into two parts. There's a graph at the top that indicates monthly how much is due and at the bottom yearly what is due. And this is where we are monitoring, Chair, the payments due in relation to the debt that we owed at the 31st of March 2021. With regards to the gearing level, Chair, it is an area that we are focusing on. It is still important that we continue to raise money from the balance sheet of Transnet as well as off balance sheet to ensure that we can support as much as possible the economic requirements in terms of the capital expenditure that is required by the country. And therefore, in with regards to gearing, Chair, we are monitoring it that it becomes an area that is not uncomfortable, but we will continue to gear the balance sheet of Transnet. Honorable Kachalia raised a point that it should be at 25% for it to be the right number. But Chair, we do benchmarks for the entities our size and the need. For now, we are working with levels of staying within 40 to 45% and not exceed 50% based on the need and the portfolio that we still have to redeem. But it's an area of focus, Chair. The other question was from Honorable Isaac around the consultants' expenditure. It's an area that we are also monitoring very closely, Chair. And if you look at our financial statement on page 59, we've actually reduced the expenditure to consultants but we are also where necessary that we need to utilize, consultants, Chair, we've got a governance process, approval and procurement process that would go on, but we have monitored and it has reduced if we compare 2021 expenditure to 2022 expenditure. Then, Chair, there was a question. I will come back to the questions on the income statement and the profit. There was a question around the pension fund board members being rotated. We have a requirement, Chair, that every 3 years, the board members of our pension funds are rotated. We have a composition of board members that are made up of our labor colleagues as well as management. And the rotation that was put through from the pension fund was in line with the rules and the requirements of the pension fund. So yes, indeed, there were changes in the pension fund's board membership, and we would review it again in 3 years' time. And then there was a question around, again from Honorable Kachalia, around the impairment numbers that we reported this year. So, Chair, the impairment is not something we would like to see in our financial statements. However, when we get our trains derailed and damaged, we have to remove them from our balance sheet because they are not worth the value. And that results in us impairing a number. So it did reduce this year and it is still a number, but it represents the level of challenges we experienced with regards to the derailment. And largely the number is in the TFR space as a result of those challenges. But again, it's a number we want to reduce because ultimately, if these numbers are significant, we still have to spend cash to ensure that the impaired trains are brought back to operation. And it doesn't show as cash when you impair it, but it's cash when you have to repair the train that may have been derailed. Chair, then there's a few questions that were around the profit. And on slide number 23 of the presentation we shared with the committee, we go through the details of the 8.7 billion loss. And maybe just to highlight, Chair, a straight arithmetic that it's 6.5 billion is not correct, because if you look at the loss that we made in 2021, 8.7, there was a significant portion of provisions that we had put through in relation to the issues of security that Michelle was going to talk to in the pipeline and other areas. And that was a cost that we were going to spend. I did highlight in the presentation that in the new year, a lot of work has happened in that space such that the damage we would have caused to the environment with the security measures we've put in place is reduced. So we didn't have to repeat those kinds of provisions. And that on its own is an improvement in the financial performance before you take into account the work we did in the revaluation of our property portfolio. And therefore, impairments reducing is quite a critical thing to the Transnet business, that we are not then derailing as much. Reduction in provision is an indication that the work we are doing and the security measures, which are actually still costing us, and I think Minister alluded to the work that is happening at country level, is those contributed to us not reporting a significant loss as we did in the previous financial year. So those are the non-cash adjustments that are in the financial statements. I do think, however, Chair, we need to be aware that ultimately they result in cash outflow when you have to deal with the rehabilitation and so on. Then there was a question around deferment of creditors. Chair, we don't have that in our financial statement as a standalone item, but what I would just like to highlight in that regard is that we have a process of making sure that we manage our working capital, where we would like to ensure we collect our cash as quickly as possible. We manage the payment of our creditors. And in the work that we did with the Auditor General, we have a report that does indicate that on average, taking into account the small suppliers that we pay in 7-14 days, those that we pay in 30 days, the average payment days of Transnet suppliers is around 23 days over time. And we have basically engaged with that report as it had been reviewed by the Auditor General. Chair, I think I have touched on all the financial questions. And maybe lastly, the question was asked about the terms of the 1 billion maturity. Chair, when we engage lenders around borrowing, it is a negotiation that we go through that takes into account Transnet balance sheet, Transnet credit risk, but also a benchmark to say what is the right price that should be charged. And we went through that process in the process of redeeming the 1 billion that we mentioned. But there is a process that you would engage with any lender before you raise any money with them. Chair, I will stop there and check with Portia if there's any other questions I must address. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, did you cover the 45, the gearing, what we believe is the gearing we should be going to?
I did at the start, Portia. The gearing at 45%, I did indicate that at this point in time, we are working with a range of 40 to 50%, and that's where we are at the moment. But we don't believe that 25% is a reasonable level for the debt level that we are at the moment. I did.
Okay. All right. Michelle, are you now able to talk?
Yes, thank you, Portia. Good afternoon, everyone. Apologies for the connectivity problem. I'll try to be as brief as possible, but as Nonku has mentioned, we have done quite a bit of work in terms of the environmental program that we've put in place, but it's really because of also the integrated security strategy. We've essentially flipped the entire TPL strategy as it previously existed on its head and decided as a business that you recall in previous engagements, I would talk about the cost of the consequences of failing to secure the pipeline. We have seen that if we flip the strategy and we work on protecting the pipeline and spending the money on the integrated security measures that we've put in place, that we can then prevent, first of all, damage to the pipeline, prevent the environmental damage and spillage that we have seen over the past few years. And that has certainly shown benefit in this past year. So what you note that in the 2020 year, when we first started doing this work, our environmental provisions were sitting probably in the region of about 2.6 billion rand. That would have meant that if we took all of these open sites that Honorable Kachali was often complaining about along the N3. And if we look at it, all of the money that we would have required to spend on remediating, it would have cost us 2.6 billion if we had spent all that money. However, due to the changes in the strategy and very tightly managing service providers, as well as our employees and how we do the work, close relationship with the environmental department, the DEFF, and us going and walking through all of these sites together, physically assessing all of the sites. We have, between last year and also continuing to this year, we've been able to save, I think by September, it will be in excess of 1.3 billion rand. What that requires, though, is that we continue to secure the pipeline, and that we continue to manage everybody that is involved in work on the pipeline as much as possible. So just to give an overview, before COVID, TPR was moving probably around just in excess of 16 billion liters of liquid fuel. We saw in the previous financial year that just after we were, during COVID, we were handling about 13 billion liters. We've seen a recovery of that in excess of 15 billion liters, and we see us in the next year moving to in excess of 16 billion liters, which will take us to pre-COVID levels. What that means, of course, is that the criminals are aware, the syndicates are aware, with the petrol prices going up, we know that we will be targeted again by these syndicates. So we have, with the strategy of increasing the cost that we are willing to spend on security and thereby ensuring that we have less damage to our communities and the communities in which we operate, we've been able to tightly manage the security incidents. At the end of the last financial year, we were averaging around 3 incidents. We have seen a little bit of a pickup this new financial year, but are beginning to tightly manage that again further down. If we look at the costs before all of these interventions, we would have seen around about 400 million rand per annum being spent on cleanup. We would have seen environmental remediation costs in excess of 1 billion. And of course, the major matter for us, we have a saying in TPL which says, keep Gauteng wet, which means security of supply at all costs. So we've essentially been ensuring that despite these incidents, that we ensure that any interruption on the line is kept to a shorter time as possible, that we've innovated and tried to find new ways to even repair the damage. And in this way, we are able to save time so that if in the rare event that there is an interruption in the line, that we are able to get back up and running as soon as possible. The drivers of these costs, of course, is the security of the network, the containment and recovery costs after every incident, the revenue that we lose due to pipeline downtime. We lose product as a result of the theft incident, and then, of course, we've got all of the environmental costs. On average, over the past 3 years, we've seen site cleanup costs averaging 3.2 million rand per incident. We've seen lost revenue per incident of around 14.4 million rand, and we've seen the annual cost of stolen fuel around 120 million rand, and like I said, the environmental cost around, on average, about 300 million rand per annum. However, over the 3 years, if you look at from the year 1920 to 2020, we were at that time when things were really bad, we were losing about 11.8 million liters out of the, let's call it 16 billion liters. In 2020-21, that number came down to 10.53 million liters. And in 21-22, we were able to bring that number down to 6 million liters. However, that 6 million liters was largely also because we were able to halve the amount of fuel theft incidences that we had previously received, that we had previously experienced in the previous years. And we see in this financial year, we are hoping to also beat the number that we had achieved in 21-22. We know that for the most part, it is 63% of the fuel that is stolen is diesel. So over the last 3 years, we've lost around 30 million liters out of the 31 million liters, 63% of that being diesel and about 33% being petrol. The hotspot areas, if I could just indicate, Mpumalanga, 50% of our theft incidents occur in that area. We have seen Gauteng and Northwest also emerging recently as an area of concern. On the NMPP itself, over the past 3 years, we've had 21% of incidences occurring on the NMPP. But of course, the bulk of our security deployments is in respect of the NMPP, because we understand the importance of that particular line to Gauteng and the economy as a whole. If I can just go back to the provinces, so 21% of incidents, Gauteng, Northwest and Free State. Also a lot of impact there with the Zama Zamas. 50% in Mpumalanga, 21% KZN and Gauteng, and then we've seen another 8% in the other areas. Over the period, we have reported 293 cases. We've impounded a number of vehicles and tankers, 56 and 60 tankers impounded. However, you know, part of the integrated approach that we've put in place is actually to walk cases throughout the court system all the way from arrest to ensure that because it's a critical infrastructure crime, that perpetrators are properly charged so that they do not get bail, because once they get bail, we know that we are then unable to find them. and then engaging with the prosecutors, the Hawks, PPCI, etc., to ensure that we get convictions. Unfortunately, out of the 186 arrests that we've had over the period, we are currently sitting on 7 convictions out of 4 cases that have been successful. Part of the work that we are doing nationally with other SOEs is to also, I think, advocate for some kind of special, whether it be court, you know, pretty much like the SAU has in terms of a tribunal, but special court and probably a SWAT team of prosecutors that can take some of these matters, both from the TFR, the ESCOM and TPL, through the courts very quickly, because unfortunately they are taking quite a long time to get perpetrators to book. We've had a number of successes, as I've said, particularly over the last 60 days. We've probably arrested, I think we've arrested about 35 people, but we also had quite a, when I said it picked up in the last 3 months, the petrol price, the fuel price has not been helpful in a sense because it's made the demand and for the product a little bit more than we would have liked. Portia, I'm not sure if I've covered everything that's been asked of me.
Yes, Michelle. No, thank you very much. I just thought it would be useful to cover that detail. And Honourable Chair, I'd like Cafe to answer the questions of the properties, the ones that have been occupied, the issue that's raised by the Honourable Shabalala as well as just talk to this issue of where we're at with the evaluations. And I think that would be the last other before I come in, Chair.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Poshia. Good afternoon. And good afternoon, Chair, Honourable Minister, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. There were 3 questions that were raised in relation to property. The first one coming through from Honourable Dlamini about what measures are in place to evict unlawful occupiers of properties and or hijacked properties, especially in the Durban area. Chair, I must say that as and when a property becomes vacant, it becomes ripe for illegal invasion. We try our best not to leave properties vacant, especially if they're in a occupiable state. However, it happens many times, and recently it was also all in the media where a property has been occupied forcefully in Durban. We open cases, police cases, whenever a property has been identified as illegally occupied. Alternatively, when the property becomes vacant, we put in security. But in the Durban CBD, or should I say in the Durban area, Chair, we have seen a number of threatening events to even our security that we put into properties. However, as and when those happens, we open police cases, and those that we can quickly take them to court on an urgent basis and or based on the court roll, we take them to court and we follow that process. We all know evicting people without a court order, it is something that the courts frown on, and we don't want to do that. Hence, we follow the legal process to evict the people. The recent one, Montclair Lodge, that has been in the papers, we managed to get a court order, and the people were evicted. However, discussing with the province and the municipality and National Department of Human Settlement, they are looking at acquiring the property in order to accommodate those people. The second question was raised by Honorable Gomani. I think it is linked to the same question by Honorable Dlamini, where she said Transnet must take us into confidence about the illegal occupation of properties. I think, Honourable Gomani, that is basically what we are doing. Transnet owns properties throughout the country. Everywhere where there were operations of the old railways, they would build houses and they will build shared properties that would accommodate their operations if and when operations were moving from those areas, then the properties would remain. Some properties are occupied by staff members, some are occupied by retirees of Transnet, especially the houses, and we are working on a process to dispose some of those houses to those that have occupied them, starting with the Transnet employees and Transnet retirees, to ensure that the properties don't get occupied for free, and secondly, that they are not left to deteriorate. However, in doing this, there would be instances where properties would be, yes, illegally occupied, and where we find them, we take the necessary legal processes to ensure that we remove the people that are there. The third question was raised by Honorable Tshabalala relating to poisons, informal settlement. Honorable Tshabalala is correct. The informal settlement, the majority of people living in that informal settlement are undocumented foreign nationals. We have been working and we continue to work with the city of Johannesburg in order to ensure the people are removed. We wanted to separate the rail line and the informal settlement and wanting to build at least a wall to ensure that people's lives are not endangered when the trains are passing there. However, there is an encroachment on the rail line and the people refuses to move. Now, the city of Johannesburg has identified land where they wanted to relocate these people to. Unfortunately, as we all know, relocating people will require a certain verification. And as a result, and especially because of what you have mentioned of many of them being foreigners, now they refuse to go to that land that was identified by the city of Johannesburg. One, they raise the issue of distance, but secondly, is the issue of verification. Now, we continue to engage the city of Johannesburg, and we will make ourselves available, as you have indicated, that in those meetings, and in particular myself, I'll make myself available in those meetings with yourselves, where we can see how we resolve this matter with the city of Johannesburg. But again, then it will bring the issue of the police coming into the picture, but that will be the city of Johannesburg ensuring that during their verification, they bring law enforcement agencies to assist them, because it becomes a little bit of a challenge in a situation where we don't have that capacity ourselves. Because when they raise the issue of distance, they also raise the issue of job opportunities. Now, that is something that as Transnet, we are not able to deal with. Hence, we rely on the city of Johannesburg to help us to resolve the issue of the land and the relocation of the people. Once the people are relocated, as Transnet, we have committed ourselves to build a perimeter wall separating where people can be, as well as where the rail line is going to be, because we want to secure the rail reserve. The last one that Portia is requesting now is also on the issue of the valuations. Property valuations, Chair, is a continuous process. What used to happen in the past in Transnet, properties were valued, but they were valued by internal Transnet valuers. Now, with the AG coming into the picture now to become the new auditors of Transnet, AG, starting last year, they had a challenge to accept valuations done by internal employees of Transnet. And we had to, at the time, appoint independent valuers to come and verify those numbers. But AG also appoint their own independent expert to come and review those valuations. And with the AG having reviewed them last year, this to go and do the valuations for us. And I think we will continue to use independent valuers to continue with our valuations going forward. We are in a procurement process now to appoint valuers for a 3-year term. And once they are appointed, hopefully starting from next month, they will then begin the new valuation process. Thank you, Chair. I hope I've answered the questions.
Chair, if I just may then close off on some of those that I think were not. In as far as the representation of female staff in the in operations and Transnet, we are at 32%. We may not be at 50%, but I think for a very labor in, intensive and capital equipment intensive operation, we are doing very well. And bear in mind, we have to continue looking after our male colleagues as well in the company. The issue of security, one of the, over and above the issues that have been raised both by Michelle as well as Rizani, we are making sure that we increase our engagements with the community. The new tender that Transnet, that TFR has issued, is an outcomes-based tender. And the nature of the tender is such that we will be looking at success and no longer looking at how many helicopters, vehicles, guns, and the rest of the like, which means that for the first time, community-based security companies are going to make sense of coming onto the system. Our clear argument is that in terms of getting on-time, real-time intelligence, they would be the best place to be able to provide this. So we'll be watching to see if there are interesting partnerships that start to arise. Back to the third-party access question. I think the questions of the Zani has answered some of the questions. And obviously, with the introduction of the new economic regulator, the governance of the rules for third-party access are now going to be directly under the oversight of the economic regulator, firstly. Secondly, in the 2 years, we're all working very hard to create the ecosystem that will allow a vibrant market for third-party access, and as you would have, for example, in a country like Germany. So leasing companies need to be made available because it's the leasing companies that will be carrying the cost of the rolling stock. So the question and the argument made by many of the potential train operating companies is not true that is going to be limited, that is going to damage their businesses. The truth would be if we were going to walk away from this and treat it as a pilot instead of the same thing. It is going to be a permanent fixture in Transnet, because as you can imagine, for Transnet, we have a direct incentive for supporting this, because we now, for the first time, in the case of TFR, are going to be generating revenue out of two assets, the infrastructure on the one hand, as well as the operations on the other side. I then wanted to also just close off on this question of maintenance on infrastructure on rail. Since 2012 to 2022, we have spent 32.9 billion rand on maintenance on the infrastructure side. In the case of TPT, we spent 1.5 billion rand on capital equipment maintenance. Is it enough for what we have to do? No. On an annual basis, in the case of infrastructure, we should be spending between 7 and 9 billion rand a year. We're nowhere near there. We're around 3 billion on the back of the money that we have. And that's one of the reasons why we have a very active program where we are talking to both IDC and the DBSA to see how they might be able to enable us to fund the rest of the maintenance that we have to undertake. There are a lot of questions that have been raised, and I think we've heard you quite well on that one, around actively working on what are the economic multiplier effects of the investments that Transnet is making. The question that Honorable Dlamini asked, which is around the BEE spend, what is the impact that it has? Who are the companies that get the contracts? We've heard that, and we will make the information available so that the committee is able to assess that going forward. In the case of both TE, Transnet Engineering, as well as Transnet TPT, and in fact all of the ODs, we are looking at establishing master service agreements with the OEMs. Now, the advantage of this means that we would have consignment stock in South Africa, especially for imported componentry, number one. Number two, it also means that when there is a technically difficult maintenance or fix that we have to undertake, the OEMs will be available on the ground and provide immediate support. Absolutely critical, because one of the major things is that you cannot have a short ship-to-shore crane, which is out of service when the thing costs us 300 million rand to buy. Every hour it isn't operational, there's a revenue loss. So that culture change and getting everyone to understand that we must shift our gear towards ensuring that all of the equipment that we have is operational, because every day that it's not being used, it either leads to an impairment on the one hand, but at worst case scenario, we continue to pay for this, the loans that we would have incurred. Chair, I want to also just go back to one of the questions that also asked by Honorable Lamini, and it's the fact that he states, which is around the 27-year concession agreement that we've given to a player for LPG. Indeed, it is the case. And indeed, that remains one of the most difficult situations that we are trying to resolve to ensure that there can be third-party access. We've learned a lot out of that exercise and have ensured that in the new terminal, in Richards Bay, where we are looking at edible oils import, we are ensuring that all third-party open access infrastructure is going to be owned directly by Transnet, so that we can have direct control in connecting any other customer who would like to connect onto the system. One of the challenges that we have to be very honest about, which we are dealing with, the TNPA has to deal with, is ensuring that when we give a private sector party a license to operate an open access facility, we need, along with them, to have direct access to the metering equipment, so that when a party asks to use the capacity, we are able to verify if indeed the capacity is fully utilized or not. Because to be honest, at present, we don't have that ability. I then want to just close off on this. The one question, I think it was by the Honorable Kachania, but one member did ask, our Honorable Member asked the question about when's the crunch going to come, or when's the next crunch. If this is a turnaround, and I think it really is important, and the Minister raised this point, is that it's the turnaround. We are starting to see genuine green shoots on the other side. It is unfortunate that it is only now in September, or end of August, that we've been able to arrive at an agreement with the Chinese on how we resolve on the locals, the spares, the returning to service of long-standing locals, which is absolutely important for ensuring increased availability and increased reliability for us. But over and above that, it has a direct positive impact on PE, because there will be increased work that will happen on the maintenance side going forward in PE. We are hopeful of getting to a resolution with BT Alstom, because once we've reached a resolution with BT Alstom, the only outstanding would be CNR, and we've already raised a proposal with CNR on how we might be able to close that matter. Closing that issue means that one of the three binding constraints that we've had in the case of TFR, which is local availability, will be fundamentally dealt with. It takes time, unfortunately, before we'll be able to see locals on the system, but we're working hard, because as I said, each time a local is not operating, it has a direct impact on the impairment charge on us. And remember, we continue to pay interest for an asset that's not generating revenue. Secondly, we've already indicated all of the interventions that we have in terms of dealing with vandalism, cable theft, and everything else. We're doing the best to cut that back to some sort of manageable number. And lastly, on the issue of maintenance of infrastructure, this remains a question that needs to be dealt with. Now, what we've been doing, gone back to government, and we said, look, if we're going to be able to have an infrastructure system and a logistics system that enables exports at least cost, we definitely need to look at models implemented by other countries, because we only have, in our case, the only thing that we have to do is Transnet is ensure that the maintenance is at a level so that we can bring back the assets so that they can be fully utilized. To do that, our one option, as we are currently undertaking, there's a new economic regulator coming, much as in the case of TPL as well as TNPA. We are doing an asset valuation for TFR and ensuring that we will get a fair return so that we are able to ensure that we ensure long-term maintenance is undertaken, but as well as expansions when they need to take place on the system will take place. Now, that is not going to be cheap. It is for that reason that we've gone to government and raised the issue that one of the strongest exporting economies in the world, which is Germany, has over the past, since 2020 until 2029, has been given Deutsche Bahn, which is fundamentally state-owned, not 100% state-owned, but majority owned by the state, 63 billion euros, which goes towards the maintenance of the infrastructure. It is on the back of that that they are able to reduce the cost of logistics and ensure that there's a genuine fillip towards driving affordable exports out of the German economy. In 1987, it's the de Villiers Commission that made the recommendation to government that government must stop spending in infrastructure and ensure that on the rail side and ensure that it sweats the assets that it has. We think it's about time that there was a turnaround. It's for that reason that we are fully in support of the rail-to-road strategy. The movement of road, of traffic, of at least manufacturing traffic from road on the M3 towards the container corridor, as we call it, is a priority for us at Transnet. And soon I think we might be able to come up with a solution that works both for industry and works as well for Transnet. Chair, I'd like to stop at this point. I think we've covered all of the questions. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Yes, at a very right time. That is it, Honourable Members. But I think we still have space for follow-up, which will be one or three people. I'm giving opportunity for one or three people to take not more than a minute each on just follow-ups only. I've seen you, just hold on. I'm looking for the second person, because if a person didn't come up before I give anyone, I won't give an opportunity to those who will be provoked by the question that has been asked. I just want to check if there is anyone to raise a follow-up question. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. There's only one person here. Honorable Shabalala.
All right, thank you so much, Chair. Chair, let me think the responses. Clearly, there is a lot of cohesion in the team that Ms. Poshi and that the Mpopo really leads. I'm quite impressed. However, I think there's just matters that they need to respond to in writing, but also to just as a comment, just to say to Minister, wishing Minister very well, because I could hear him, he's not feeling well. So I wish him well so he can wear shorts. We're in the season of summer now. Chair, Mr. Tumi did indicate what the work they're doing in the training, artisanry, in the question that I raised around issues of female employees. And Poshia did answer by saying that, I mean, you are accounting for 74%. But my specific question was in relation to the operating division that employs 23,465 permanent employees, and male employees account for 68.26% of the workforce, while the females account for 31%. So as you acknowledge, yes, you are doing well, it's intensive and so forth, but at the end of the day, the division needs to improve. I think that is the point for me. It doesn't really need a response around that. Chair, I think we need to get in writing the response when it comes to matters of the preferential procurement policy that requires localization in all contracts to be verified through this SAPS. However, the cost of these verifications, as you've been responding, have not really been included between the entity and the supplier contract. So I think I would want to get that answer in writing. Lastly, Mr. Kape, thank you so much on the issue of poisons. However, I still feel that, and I'm very glad when you say you'll come personally. So I think that we need to do that meeting because we've been planning to have an imbizo with the police. There's a number of factors, as you would have said, but overall and above, at the helm of it, is that you, Transnet, there should be lessons that you've learned. You don't leave your property unattended because thugs and criminals will take opportunities of that. So that high wall, that's exactly what we are trying to lean towards, remove the people there and get there. So we'll have that multi-sectoral meeting so that we ensure that we deal with these matters. But don't wait for an MP to be there. It's your daily job. So I suggest that you get on to it. The time we called the meeting, at least you would have been abreast with the latest developments, be it with the city of Johannesburg and police and so forth and so on. But thank you so much, Chair. I'm really humbled by the responses.
Thank you. Can I take it back to you, Group CEO?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think what the Honourable Shabalala was asking for is written responses. So we will make sure to come back on the written responses. Honourable Chair, I mean, one of the things that would be quite useful if we had a discussion with the committee at some point is this issue of localization and the cost thereof. We are mostly worried, and we've raised this with the department as well as the DTIC and the Department of Transport, by the way, is that there's a drive to ensure that we re-establish the manufacturing sector, in, manufacturing in the rail sector, especially rail manufacturing components and the rest and the like. One of the things that we have indicated to the Department of Transport and DTIC is that it is not sufficient to ask that we should buy local only as TFR and Transport, and yet you leave all of the other train operating companies that are going to come into the system. We need to ensure that every single train operating company complies with the same localization so that there would be significant volumes, at least the same volume of work that was previously demanded, being made available to industry. And I think that would require a joint DTIC, DPE, and DOT solution to ensure that we tie that up as we go towards closure on the third-party exit. It's not going to be popular with the train operating companies, but we believe it is absolutely crucial if we're going to be able to retain the stimulatory effect of the localization in the absence of any sort of support program that's coming out of the DTIC, as they themselves acknowledge. But thank you, Chair. I mean, the rest we will write the answers and make available to the Honourable Members and to you through yourself. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for the Minister and the Chair of the Board participating.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Group CEO. Honourable Members, that take us to the end of our meeting. Because of the fact that Mr. Mutumi is on leave, we not have the following item, which was to be the minutes of the previous meeting. We'll take it to the next session. All what we can do now is just to send a word of appreciation to all our guests, the minister, and the ministry as a whole, including the Department of Public Enterprises, Dr. Popo Molefe, the chairperson of the board of Transnet, the group CEO, Ms. Portia Deby. We really appreciate your comprehensive presentation to this committee, and the manner in which you tackle all our questions and the responses. With those words, you are free to leave the session, and the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Shabalala here. Please get hold of me. Please. Thanks.